Title page of Malleus Maleficarum, Hammer of Witches, 1486. Read for you by Margaret Atwood. The increasingly virulent hatred of women, which manifested both in Joan of Arc's execution and in subsequent debates about the essence of women, reached its climax with the witch hunts of the early modern period. In general, the whole witch-burning business is regarded as a phenomenon of the Middle Ages, a peculiar characteristic of an era apparently deeply dark and misogynistic. In reality, this madness, which had people right across Europe accusing their neighbors, children, and friends of associating with the devil, ushered in the so-called Renaissance. In the 1970s, the American historian Joan Kelly asked a provocative question in an essay of the same title: did women have a renaissance? She went on to answer it herself in the very first paragraph, with a resounding no. The Renaissance didn't just see women lose the playful access to love and freedom that women of the court had enjoyed in the Middle Ages. Now, they were also being hunted because they were fundamentally mistrusted. Women were the scapegoats of modernity, as historian Michel Perrault once put it, and back then, in the 16th and 17th centuries, things were probably much the same as they are with modern-day conspiracy theories. Overwhelmed by the new times in which they were living, an era marked by epidemics, bad harvests, a prolonged cold snap, and new sets of values, people went in search of an explanation for all that was going wrong in life, and they soon found it in one imaginary figure, the witch. A certain book, the so-called Malleus Maleficarum, or Hammer of Witches, was instrumental in the wholesale spread of a panic that soon had all levels of society in its grip. Its author, the German Dominican friar and inquisitor Heinrich Kramer, laid out in its pages a simplified, twisted version of the theories of Thomas Aquinas, Augustine, and others, finishing it off with a sprinkling of misogynistic truths: Eve as proof of all women's susceptibility to sin, and suddenly he had a 700-page work that was hard to beat in terms of sheer hatred. It says, for example, "For truly, without the wickedness of women, to say nothing of witchcraft, the world would still remain proof against innumerable dangers." Or, "It is better called the heresy of witches than of wizards, since the name is taken from the more powerful party." Just as many lies are spread today with the help of the internet, so too did a brand new technology contribute to the popularity of this work, as well as the theories expounded within: letterpress printing. This was the first time it had been possible to disseminate ideas to a huge number of people in a very short space of time. Until that point, it had been necessary to copy books by hand, which took forever, and pretty much no one had been able to read them anyway. But now it was all looking a bit different. Over the years following its publication in 1486, the three volumes of Hammer of Witches were reprinted countless times, and 30,000 copies sold throughout Europe. The consequences are well known. Thousands of women, plus a few men, were subjected to Kafkaesque trials and executed with absolutely no evidence against them. The general public learned about the contents of Hammer of Witches from preachers, especially in Germany, Switzerland, and northern Italy, and expanded upon them with the help of their own imaginations. It must have been terrifying to live in that climate of fear and collective madness. After all, absolutely anyone could turn out to be a witch: your mother, your best friend, your sister, perhaps even yourself. In the mid-16th century, a young woman from the small town of Pau in the south of France is said to have accused not just her entire family, but also herself, of witchcraft. During her trial, she explained that yes, they did indeed ride on broomsticks, also regularly had sex with Satan, and of course ate small children. In the end, her family were burned at the stake, but she was spared in light of her honest atonement. Most alleged witches, however, tended to be betrayed by third parties. For the majority, it was because they were deemed to be different, old, alone, possibly foreign, or in the worst case, Jewish. It was no coincidence that witches supposedly flew their broomsticks on Shabbat, of all days. But often, it was the women who possessed some kind of non-academic knowledge of whom people were most afraid. This applied particularly if they were able to heal gynecological afflictions. Even in the 19th century, the novelist George Sand had the protagonist of Little Fadette say, "Well, instead of being thanked kindly by all the children of my own age whose wounds and illnesses I had healed and to whom I had taught my remedies without asking for any reward, I was accused of being a witch." The clergy put it somewhat more harshly. If any woman dare to practice healing without having studied, she is then a witch and must be condemned to death. The general public seems to have gone blindly along with this proclamation. Contrary to what you might think, most trials weren't conducted by the Inquisition, but by ordinary people. A people's court would be established, the job of which was to determine whether this child or that had fallen ill because of a midwife's curse, or whether the malignant glances of an elderly neighbor had indeed killed that poor cow. Women had their heads shaved and were tortured. They were inspected for marks of the devil, and if none were found, well, that only meant that Satan was protecting them particularly well. After a while, nearly every victim would plead guilty to even the most insane allegations. Although somewhere between 30,000 and 60,000 people, three-quarters of them women, were executed for alleged witchcraft in the period from 1560 to 1630, almost no one who lived in that supposedly so enlightened age actually spoke out against this barbaric practice. Michel de Montaigne is reputed to have murmured that it was a little bit crazy to burn a human being on the grounds of an unsubstantiated suspicion, but he found himself entirely alone in this observation. Women had absolutely no support in the face of the outlandish accusations being made against them, and it's hard to escape the thought that many people, while not necessarily pro, but also not actively against witch hunting, took the stance they did because women, or those accused of witchcraft at least, represented access to a world that worked more on intuition than on pure rationality. It's probably for this reason, too, that the figure of the witch has continued to experience a revival every three decades or so, especially in modern times. She embodies alternative forms of existence, a primordial female power.